Welcome, everybody. This is what we do every week here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's time to get in the cage. It's a pleasure to bring to the program for the first time. I've watched this guy for quite a while, reading his stuff, listening to his show on Sirius XM Rush 93. The one, the only, Luke Thomas is with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Luke, how are you, man?
Doing well. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. As I said, I watched you when you were doing the show with Craig Carton and my buddy Nate Quarry, and listened to your stuff on Sirius XM. So it's a pleasure to have you on the program. And I wanted to hit a few different things with you. And I know you tweeted about some of the stuff I wanted to hit with you. And I want to take you back to the card we just watched. Before we get into what Daniel Cormier did, I've got to get your take on the Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou fight, because that was the most perplexing thing I've seen in years. And to Lewis's defense, I guess he's had chronic back issues. I guess it made a little bit of sense as to why he was fighting that way. Not that it made it any better, but Ngannou afterwards saying, you know, he carried over fear from his previous fight with Stipe into this fight, and that made no sense to me whatsoever, because it wasn't like he went in there and took this ugly beating. It was kind of a slow pace. Both guys kind of out of gas. He loses. It wasn't one of those beatings you thought would change a guy. And I'm curious what your response was to what he had to say.
Yeah, it was funny. When he first mentioned the fear, I didn't know exactly what he was talking about either. And some people had speculated, well, maybe it was the fear of getting tired, because that was initially what had set him back. Well, I wouldn't say initially, but that was, let's say, a major contribution to why that Stipe fight didn't go his way. Not the only reason, but a big one. But then I spoke to Derek Lewis, his opponent, who, as you mentioned, you know, he has a role to play here, but he's acknowledged that the injury set him back and that he is entitled to nothing, even though he got a victory. So I admire his candor. But he told me, Derek Lewis did, that when he was looking at Francis in the face at the weigh-ins, it was one look, and then when they got to the fight itself, it was totally another, that he absolutely was afraid of contact, of getting in there. It wasn't fatigue, actually, in his judgment. So you say it wasn't a big beating, but you got to remember, the guy was still very early in his career. He was beating guys relatively quickly, first-round knockouts left and right, and he had never been in a five-round fight, certainly never one that had gone the distance like that. And you know, remember, he lost 50-44 on all three judges' scorecards. That fourth round was a 10-8 round. He got whooped. Mm-hmm. Now, he didn't get whooped to the thing you're talking about, where you see Frankie Edgar get beaten and bloodied and just comes back. But people have different tolerances for this kind of thing, especially, remember, he doesn't just have minimal experience. He got into the game late, so he doesn't have this upbringing where he'd been in the cauldron of fire for a very long time. And clearly it scarred him. I don't know how repairable it is. My hope is that it is, but that's a bad place to be, man.
Yeah, and it would seem that when other heavyweights hear that, it's like, you know, blood in the water, shark circling, that they see a guy who mentally can be broken. I mean, if physically he's a specimen. If he hits you, he's going to knock your head off. Just ask Alistair Overeem. But to hear a guy say that and you know, and see how he responded to it, I would think any other heavyweight in that division is saying, let me have a piece of this guy.
Yeah, right. I mean, because if you're going to get him, now's the time. We've seen him at his best, and he's a nightmare to deal with. So now you can get him at his worst. And, you know, you still have to be wary of his power, obviously. Even a guy who can be afraid, you know, he can still be dangerous. But, you know, it's funny. You go back and you watch that fight. Not only was he not throwing punches, but when he did, they were almost like get-off-me punches, almost like pushes, rather than some kind of full-throated commitment to a shot. As you indicated, these are terrible signs. So I'm glad he acknowledged it. I think that actually takes a degree of a separate kind of bravery, but that's a tough road to come back from.
So as it pertains to DC, he pulled off what a lot of people thought was improbable. I actually, and this is not me saying I told you so by any stretch, I didn't pick him to win, but I felt like he was not being given the credit that he deserved going into this. I just didn't feel like, you know, in fact, I referred to that Stipe fight with Ngannou because I thought, you know, yeah, Stipe dominated the fight, but he didn't put the beating on a guy who clearly had nothing left in front of him. They both kind of walked around the last two rounds of that fight. They were both exhausted. Stipe never looked unbeatable to me, as good as he is. I love the guy, but I thought Daniel had a good shot, obviously a much better shot than anybody gave him. How surprised were you by the outcome?
Not at all. Now, like you, I get him as wrong as I get him right, so I don't make any claims of being a good prognosticator. And sometimes I'll get the fight wrong, but I'll be right about a certain part. There's something that I saw ahead of time that will play itself out. But I thought this was I never thought Stipe had much of a chance, to be perfectly honest with you. It's not because I don't respect him. That's not the case at all. I have an enormous amount of respect for him and have been wrong about Stipe in the past. In fact, part of my degree of confidence in Cormier was a little bit disconcerting because, like, well, I really believe in this guy, but I've been so wrong about the other one. But it just seemed to me, when I was listening to all the analysis, everyone's analysis in favor of Stipe just really overemphasized his strengths and didn't acknowledge any of Cormier's. Cormier told me something years ago in person that really caught my attention, and he was like, you know, I can't fight at heavyweight anymore because of Cain Velasquez, and he wasn't upset about it, but what he told me was, he goes, I love fighting at heavyweight because those guys are so slow. I can see everything coming. And he would talk about some of the fights he had where it was just child's play for him, and I don't think Stipe is a slow heavyweight, but compared to, let's say, the hand speed of Gustafsson, I don't think it's the same. And are you really going to tell me that Stipe Miocic hits harder than Anthony Johnson? In fact, I asked Cormier directly after the fight, does he? And the answer is no, he didn't. So you have to ask yourself, yes, Stipe has really good, crisp, accurate boxing down the middle, and that's a real threat. But beyond that, is Stipe going to present something he hasn't seen before? And I didn't think that he had. So to me, if he could get in there and fire an underhook and start doing his magic, it was going to be his fight to lose. I didn't know that his power was going to translate like that. I can tell you a first-round knockout I did not see coming. But that Cormier won, not surprising to me at all.
So moving forward, what – I mean, we all saw the Brock Lesnar thing in the cage afterwards. Everybody's very split on, you know, hey, that was great. It's, you know, hypes up a huge fight. Others saying this is ridiculous. Lesnar's a guy who's been suspended and shouldn't even be in a position for a title shot. Where do you stand on Brock Lesnar? I get what took place. I get the hype. I get that, you know, this gets people very interested, whether they love him or hate him. So it's good business. But is it the right fight?
Okay. Well, that's a tough one because I am normally not in favor of this kind of thing. And I don't watch pro wrestling. I don't like pro wrestling. I didn't like those antics. I don't need those antics. But Brock Lesnar has always been, for me, the exception to the rule. I think MMA needs a big fight. I think it needs a big pay-per-view. And if that's going to be Brock Lesnar, to be honest with you, I don't have much of an issue. I do feel bad for Curtis Blaydes. Derek Lewis has said he doesn't deserve it. I think that's probably a fair thing to admit. So it's not the meritocratic one. The guy was gone for however long. His last one was Mark Hunt, but of course that was overturned. So like, there's no good argument to make other than it would be fun and compelling and Cormier would get a big payday and the sport probably needs it. If that's not compelling to you or your listeners, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But does it bother me? No, I guess it doesn't.
I don't think it would. I'm with you on this. I think if it were in another weight division where it was just stacked with talent, with so many viable contenders, I'd have a bigger issue. But I think the heavyweight division is truly lacking any sort of electricity, any sort of very obvious challengers. I mean, Blaydes is a decent example, but he's far from a household name. I mean, I think it works in the heavyweight division more than it would in another division where you've got legit guys who have been winning, who are in their prime, aching for a title shot, deserving of a title shot. That, to me, just doesn't exist at the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Curtis Blaydes has certainly put together a exemplary resume. I don't mean to say that he has something, nothing going for him. But at the same time, the signature win came over Mark Hunt, and it came via wrestling. It's like, do I really think that's a compelling matchup for Daniel Cormier? I guess I don't. And not that Brock Lesnar isn't either. However, there are a ton of other reasons to make that fight. Keep in mind, not only will Cormier get paid fighting Brock Lesnar, but everyone else on that card will be on a really big card, which will bring them extra attention, which could help launch another star. Like, there are a lot of other benefits to doing it. So meritocratically, under most circumstances, if we did this interview and it was a little bit of a few different names, I would give you a very different answer, but I'm willing to let this one go for I think what's a better net win for the sport? Not a full win, but a net win. I think it's Brock Lesnar fighting Cormier.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Luke Thomas is our guest here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's Get in the Cage, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. The one thing I didn't love, and I give Daniel credit, he copped to this, being hypocritical, is where he's – he's obviously incredibly willing and looking forward to fighting Brock Lesnar because of all the things we just said. It's going to be a massive payday, yet this is a guy who's a multiple-time cheat in terms of steroids. He's under suspension for the past 2 years. He's got to do his 6 months in the USADA testing, the whole thing. Yet he's more than happy to give him the opportunity. At the same time, when he was asked about John Jones, and he's like, hey, you know, this guy doesn't deserve a platform. He's a cheater. He doesn't deserve it. Okay. And he even kind of said, yeah, I'm being hypocritical, but I'm the champ. So that's how it goes. How do you take that? And is that a fight you would still want to see, even though Jones has proven? I mean, I don't think he had an advantage in that first fight. The people talking about him using cocaine, I don't think he was on the drug during the fight. I certainly don't think it helped him leading up to the fight. So in my mind, you might have seen a diminished version of Jones in that first fight. He's beaten him twice. I'm curious about the intrigue level just in terms of the competition between the two for you.
Now, the two, you mean Lesnar and Cormier?
No, Cormier and Jones.
Cormier and Jones. Yeah, well, this is a complicated one, as you can well imagine. So, how do I explain this in a short fashion? I would say that I will give you an answer that most people probably would not, although maybe in the future that would change. I am not nearly as bothered by performance-enhancing drug use as other people. In fact, I wouldn't say I'm bothered by it almost at all. My basic belief is that look at the NBA and ask yourself how it's possible they've never had a PED scandal. Now, you have various individuals who have been caught at times for what I would describe as very moderate, low-level offenses. But how is it possible you've never had, while you've had it in every other sport virtually, guys who don't ever seem to pop for anything significant, or that there's never any kind of real network? And my answer would be, it's not because they're superhuman. It's not because in the NBA they don't use. My hunch is that use in that league is extraordinarily prevalent. And the reason why is because they have a very powerful players' union that has crafted policies that don't invade their lives and gives them room, if they so choose, to have, and money, by the way, to buy designer stuff and things that could have, by the way, not even merely for performance enhancement, but remember, you know, they're on the road for 80 plus games a year and all this, so it could be a medicinal impact. And I think that makes the level of play better. It makes the league more exciting. And I don't think their fans really care, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, you can make all the claims you want about how fighting is different and it's more dangerous. But the answer is this: how do you regulate this stuff out of sport? And nobody can figure it out. Not WADA, not USADA, not anybody. In fact, the war on doping is failing pretty dramatically. So here's my response. Do I think a third fight would be competitive between Jones and DC? I would like to see it at heavyweight, not at light heavyweight, because I want to see DC at his absolute best. And I think it's pretty clear at this point that needs to happen at heavyweight. I don't think you can do nothing about PEDs, to be perfectly honest with you. You can't just live in a world where you can say, do whatever you want. But do I find moral harm in the idea that he may or may not have been on something in the second fight? My answer is no. I don't really care that much.
Hmm. That's interesting. And I'm a Jones fan. I'm sort of conflicted with the guy because he makes it hard to root for him because he just keeps getting his own way. So I take issue with him on that.
That's a separate issue. Like, he's got career mismanagement issues. And by the way, I also want to make clear, I realize my opinion's in the minority. I don't present it like I've got the world figured out and everybody else doesn't. I'm just trying to look around and say, why is it that NFL fans don't care when they're like Brian Cushing has failed any number of times? How is it possible that a league like the NBA has never had a PED scandal? It's not because those guys are not using. It's because they're good at disguising it, and no one seems to care.
Yeah, you can imagine on a sports show out here, when you talk about these things, it is different. In baseball, you're labeled for life, and that's a game that's built on records. It's a game that's built on numbers, so they're sort of hallowed in a certain sense, whereas football, even if you're a massive NFL fan, you probably can't tell me what the number is for the all-time leading rusher. You might know that it is Emmitt Smith, but you don't know the number. You don't know the numbers don't have the same level of just hallowedness, if you will, the way they do in other sports. So I get the distinction between football and baseball. And then you hear guys in combat sports say, well, you're taking your life in your hands. You're fighting somebody who's on something that gives him the strength and power and ability that he otherwise wouldn't have, which puts the other fighter at a tremendous risk personally. I guess I understand
So it's a fair point. I hear this common thing all the time. But this gets back to my point. It's like, imagine something that's not a sport, but you just treat it like it is. over time, I guess it just kind of becomes something. But football and baseball and swimming, I guess swimming to an extent, but not in the way we've constructed it, but certainly football and baseball and hockey, these things don't exist in the real world. Well, fist fighting does. Fist fighting is a real thing that has existed for time immemorial. We've simply added a few rules and best practices to it. I do not believe that MMA is a sport. And I guess, again, if you treat something enough like a sport, it ultimately just sort of becomes that. But the point being is if real sports like track and field, if they can't rid the world of doping and their authorities can't get rid of it, whether or not you think there is more or less grave danger in MMA is immaterial, you still run into the same structural problems in eliminating it. So now what do you do? Well, the issue to me is you find a way to live with it, not try to prohibit it outright.
Fair point. Fair point. Luke Thomas is our guest for just a couple of more moments here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Luke, one of my favorite all-time people in the sport of MMA has been Junior Dos Santos. I mean, I know you've probably talked to him a million times. You couldn't find a nicer, more cordial individual. At the same time, I used to love watching the guy fight. To me, he's a guy, for whatever reason, that's never seemed to work on his defense. He takes way too much punishment. As much as people talk about how great his boxing is and his stand-up is, yeah, if he hits you, he's going to hurt you. But he is just too willing to take punches. He does. I think his defense has been atrocious his whole career, and he's taken so much damage that I don't know that I want to see him fight that much. Where do you think he's at in his career, and why do you think his game in that aspect, considering it's been such a problem, especially in the Stipe fights and things like that, that it doesn't feel like he's ever really addressed that part of his game after all these years?
Man, it's a great question. You know, other guys have begun to figure it out. Like Alistair Overeem, you know, he was sort of known as this Dutch style, right in your face, brawl it out kind of guy. Not that he didn't have skills, but you know, he was also willing to just trade with you, and he got knocked out a lot. And so in his mid to late 30s, he readapted his style. And as you mentioned, he did get knocked out by Francis Ngannou. After all, this is fist fighting, bad things happen. But what he was able to do was he was able to say, maybe if I learn to fight on the outside, I can prolong my career and get some big wins. And that's exactly what happened. He retooled himself to stay competitive. Now, Junior Dos Santos has that opportunity here. A lot of these guys, man, when they're young and they're tough, they just bite down the mouthpiece and they just think no harm will come of them, or they don't want to acknowledge that they're running up the credit card until the bill is due. And well, now what do you do? And so I think what you're going to see here is an interesting test. This guy he's fighting this weekend, Blagoy Ivanov, he likes to charge in a little bit. I think that favors Junior Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos has had some time off. That works in his favor. And he, to your point, now has this opportunity to bring in some perspective that he has heretofore lacked. Now, will he do that? I don't know. But if he does, I do think he can remain relevant. The only question here is, does he want to change some things up to prolong his career? Because you're right. If he keeps fighting like he did in the second Cane fight, I just don't know how much longer you can do something like that.
All right, last thing before we let you go, Luke. Since Chael, since Connor, the Diaz brothers, now Colby Covington, you've seen guys just take on a different persona, feeling like if I can be outrageous, say outrageous things, good things will happen. And in most cases, it seems to work. You know, and some do it better than others. I find Colby Covington really a bore. I don't think he's clever. I don't think he's funny. I think he just, let me see if I can say something offensive and get attention. Having said that, I see that Nick Diaz popped up again, and you know, I figured he was done fighting. Now he's out there taking shots at Daniel Cormier and somehow lobbying for a fight against Cormier at heavyweight, saying he should have the fight instead of Brock Lesnar's cheating ass, as he says it. How do you take these guys, the Diaz brothers, who talk a lot but are rarely in the cage for whatever reason? Obviously, suspension's part of that, but even the other guys, the Colby Covingtons of the world, are you? Do you think it's good for the sport? Do you embrace it, or do you look at it and just go, okay, I'm kind of numb to this stuff?
Man, it's a great question. So two different birds of a feather here, because I don't think the Diaz guys put on any kind of airs. They may come off that way, but I've interacted with them in private a few times, and that's not what I took away from those experiences. But you're right. It's like Diaz hasn't won a fight in 7 years. Like, what is he doing? You know,
yeah.
And you want to go three weight classes up and get a title shot. It's like, it's just you can't even explain it rationally how someone could think that was a idea that anyone would buy into. And then on the other side of things, you have Colby Covington. You know what's funny, man? Colby Covington is, your reaction is what a lot of people have to him. And it's not that I like his jokes, because I don't, And politically, we could not be further apart. You know, I don't share that worldview with him at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a certain, you know, Chael would wink at the audience and kind of bring them in on it to
right.
an extent. Not totally, but to an extent. But that's not the only way to get attention. Like, you can... He reminds me of, you know, I remember Andy Kaufman back in the day. I'm not putting him on the same level of sophistication, but I am saying Andy Kaufman used to wrestle women, and he would have a belt where he'd be like the official wrestling champion of guys who beat up women.
Right.
Not beat up, but like wrestling ring kind of thing.
Right.
And it would, he would just go out there, and he would absolutely enrage the audience. Audiences don't necessarily like at first somebody who makes them the butt of the joke, which is what he does. Again, not in the same kind of sophisticated way, but that's more what he is. He's not asking you to be his friend. He's asking you to be his foil. And I don't know how big of a star he is. To this point, not much. But I would caution against diminishing what he's done. We don't, again, we don't look at the world the same way, and I don't necessarily laugh at his jokes, but it is not true to say he is not ascending a ladder. He's got a long way to go, and it can all backfire. But he's on his way to something if he can keep it up.
Oh, you're right. I mean, he's got himself in position for a title shot. I don't begrudge him what he's accomplished. It's worked. I just, as you said, Chael would do it with a bit of a wink. Connor was clever. There was some humor to what they said, even when they were, even yeah. if it was offensive in print. If you heard it, it was like, okay, that was kind of funny. There's obviously some context and some sort of. I don't know. There's just some lightness to it. And with Colby, I hear him, I read him, I'm going, okay, you're just trying to say, let me see what I can say that's offensive. It's not clever or funny. It's just, you sound like an ass. So, but he's getting response. You're right.
Last thing is, I forget what was the precise name of it, but it was the one with Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Yes.
You know, and like, who wins when Colby puts out Avenger spoilers on Twitter, and then, which is the same day as the NFL draft, tags the NFL draft tweet in, he uses the hashtag in his Avengers spoilers. Like, he's just out there like a drive-by spraying the block. Doesn't care if grandma gets hit, you know? Who does that? In the words of Alfred from the Batman with the Joker, some men like to watch the world burn, man. That's who he is.
That's who he is, and people will tune in hoping he gets beat, and he's it's working for him. I can't begrudge him that part of it. Hey, Luke, been a fan of yours for a long time, man. You do a great job. Again, you can catch his show on SiriusXM Rush 93 Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Does stuff on MMA fighting as well. Pleasure to speak with you. Hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it, too.